the window. I glance across the room and see Ella sitting up, lifting her arms towards the ceiling, yawning deeply. We shuffle from the room together, saying nothing. We coast about our Sunday routines and sit through Mass with our heads hung. At one point, I nudge Ella awake, and 20 minutes later, she returns the favor. I survive El Festín lunchline, doling out food while looking for anyone suspicious. When everything appears normal, I can't decide if I'm relieved or disappointed. What saddens me most is that I don't see Hector. Towards the end of cleanup, LaGuardia and Gabby begin horsing around, spraying each other with a hose attached to the kitchen sink as I dry dishes. I ignore them, even when I get splashed in the face. 20 minutes later, when I've just finished drying the last dish, carefully placing it atop the tall stack, a girl named Delfina slips on the wet floor and bumps into me, causing me to fall into the stack and send all 30 plates back into the dirty water, where some of them break. "Why don't you watch what you're doing?" I say, and I push her with one arm. Delfina spins around and shoves me right back.
"Hey!"
Sister Dora barks from across the kitchen.
"You too! Knock it off! Right now!"
"You're going to pay for that," Delfina says. I can't wait to be officially done with Santa Teresa. "Whatever," I say, still scowling. She nods at me, a malicious look upon her face. "Watch your back."
"If I have to come over there, Lord help me, you are going to regret it," Sister Dora says.
Instead of using telekinesis to toss Delfina through the roof, or Sister Dora, or Gabby, or LaGuardia for that matter, I turn back to the dishes. When I'm finally free, I walk outside. It's still raining, and I stand under the eaves and look towards the cave. The mud will be thick on the mountainside, which means I'd get filthy. I use that as an excuse for why I won't go. Though I know that even if it weren't raining, I wouldn't have the courage, despite my curiosity of whether or not new boot prints have been made in the mud. I walk back inside. Ella's Sunday duties require her to clean the nave after everyone leaves, wiping down pews. But when I go there, everything has already been cleaned. "Have you seen Ella?" I ask a 10-year-old girl named Valentina. She shakes her head. I walk back to our bedroom, but there's no sign of Ella there. I sit on her bed. The bounce of the mattress causes a silver object to peek from beneath Ella's pillow. It's a tiny flashlight. I flip it on. The light shines brightly. I turn it off and put it back where I found it, so that the sisters won't see it. I walk the halls, peeking in rooms as I go along. Because of the rain, most of the girls have stayed in, milling about in their small groups, laughing and talking and playing games. On the second floor, where the hallway splits and leads to the church's two separate wings, I go left, down a dark, dusty corridor. Empty rooms and ancient statues cut into the rock wall and arched ceiling, and I stick my head in the doorways, looking for Ella. No sign of her. The hallway narrows, and the dusty odor segues to a damp, earthy smell. At the corridor's end stands a padlocked oak door I jimmied open a week and a half ago, looking for the chest. Beyond the door is a stone stairway that circles around the narrow tower leading up to the north belfry, which holds one of Santa Teresa's two bells. The chest wasn't there either. I surf the internet for a while, but find nothing new about John Smith. Then I go to the sleeping quarters, lie in bed, and feign sleep. Thankfully, LaGuardia, Gabby, and Delfina don't come into the room. And I don't see Ella either. I crawl from bed and walk down the hall. I enter the nave and find Ella in the back pew. I sit beside her. She smiles up at me, looking tired. This morning, I had put her hair into a ponytail, but now it's come loose. I pull the band free, and Ella turns her head so I can redo it. "Where have you been all day?" I ask. "I was looking for you."
"I was exploring," she says proudly.
I instantly feel terrible all over again for ignoring her on her walks to school. We leave and go to our room, say goodnight to one another. Slipping beneath the covers, waiting for the lights to be shut off, I feel hopeless and sad, wanting to simply crawl into a ball and cry. So that's what I do. I wake in the middle of the night, and I can't tell what time it is, though I assume I've slept at least a few hours. I roll over and close my eyes again, but something feels off. There's some change in the room I can't quite explain, and it amplifies the same anxiety I've felt all week. I open my eyes again, and the second they adjust to the dark, I realize a face is staring at me. I gasp and bolt straight backwards, crashing into the wall behind me. I'm trapped, I think. Trapped in the far back corner. How stupid of me to have wanted this bed. My hands tighten, and just as I'm about to scream and kick at the face, I recognize the brown eyes.
Ella.
I instantly relax. I wonder how long she's been standing there. Very slowly, she brings her tiny index finger to her lips. Then her eyes widen, and she smiles as she leans forward. She cups her hand around my ear.
"I found the chest,"
she whispers. I pull away, look earnestly into her radiant, upturned face, and know immediately she's telling the truth. My own eyes widen. I can't contain my excitement. I pull her to me and give her the tightest hug her small body can endure.
"Oh, Ella, you have no idea how proud I am of you." "I told you I'd find it. I told you, because we're a team and we help each other."
"We do," I whisper. I let go of her. Her face brims with pride.
"Come on, I'll show you where it is."
She takes me by the hand, and I follow her around the bed, tiptoeing quietly. The chest! A bright ray of hope when I'd least expected it, when I'd needed it most. Chapter 16. We flee the room, and I have the urge to sprint to wherever Ella's leading me. She glides swiftly and soundlessly across the cold floor. The corridor is dark, and while I see everything clearly, every so often Ella flicks on the flashlight to orient herself, then quickly turns it off. When we reach the nave, I think she's going to head towards the North Tower, but she doesn't, and instead guides me up the center aisle. We skitter past the rows of pews. At the nave's front, stained glass saints line the curved wall, and the moonlight behind them brings a celestial radiance that gives each a more biblical appearance than they've ever had before. Water drips in a constant patter somewhere. Ella cuts a right turn at the front pew and sweeps towards one of the many open recesses that run the length of both walls. I follow. The air is cooler here than in the nave, and a tall statue of the Virgin Mary looms over us with arms lifted from her sides. Ella goes around her, and when she reaches the back left corner, she turns to me.
"I'll have to bring it down to you," she says, putting the flashlight in her mouth.
She takes hold of the stone pillar and scoots up it like a squirrel clawing up a tree. All I can do is watch in amazement, so impressed by her mobility. When she's almost at the ceiling, she pauses and then swings around the column, disappearing into a tight little nook that's almost invisible from where I stand. I never noticed the nook before. Lord knows how Ella did. I crane my head to listen, hearing the rough friction of her shoes scrape along the rock, which means there's just enough room for her to crawl. Some kind of tunnel. I can't help but smile. I knew the chest was here, somewhere, but I would have never found it in a million years if it weren't for Ella. I laugh at the thought of Adelina scaling the same column with the chest so many years ago. Ella has stopped. I hear nothing. 20 seconds pass.
Ella!
I whisper. She sticks her head out and looks down.
Should I come up?
She shakes her head.
It's stuck, but I almost have it. I'll bring it down to you in a minute,
she whispers back, and then yanks her head back in and disappears. I can't take the suspense of not knowing what's going on up there. I look at the base of the column and take hold of it, and just before I'm about to try climbing it, I hear a noise behind me that sounds like somebody's kicking a pew. I spin around. The Virgin Mary blocks my view. I walk around her and scan the nave, but I don't see anything.
I got it,
I hear Ella exclaim. I rush back around the statue and look up, waiting for her to appear. I can hear her grunt and struggle to drag the chest to the nook's opening, and I have no idea if it's because the chest is heavy or because the tunnel is so narrow. Little by little, the dragging continues. I feel nothing short of ecstasy at finally having the chest in my possession, and I don't even consider the problem of getting it open. I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. Just as Ella is almost to the opening, I hear something else behind me.
What are you doing up?
I whip around. Divided equally on each side of the Virgin Mary, Gabby and Delfina stand under the statue's left arm, while LaGorda and a wiry Bonita, the champion of the dog game that almost got me killed at the lake, position themselves beneath the right arm. I glance over my shoulder and see two small eyes peering down at us from the nook's opening.
What do you want?
I ask.
I wanted to see what the little tattletale was up to, that's all.
You know, it's funny, because I saw you sneak out of the room, and I thought that I would get up and finally see what it was you're always looking at on the computer. But you weren't there.
Gabby paints a sarcastic, confused look on her face.
You were in here, which is really weird.
Really weird. It's really weird,
LaGorda says. To my relief, I don't hear Ella dragging the chest anymore.
Why do you even care? I say. Seriously, all I ever do is keep to myself and keep my mouth shut.
I care a lot about you, Marina, Gabby says, stepping forward.
She flips her long dark hair.
In fact, I care so much that I worry about you hanging out with that loser drunk, Hector, all the time.
Do you get drunk with him?
She pauses.
Do you drink from his bottle?
I don't know if it was because she called Hector a loser, or because she thought our friendship was anything more than just that, or because she's snooping on what I'm doing at the computer, but it just happens. I close my eyes and reach out with my mind, grabbing all four of them at once. LaGorda screams, while the other three whimper in shock. I pick them up off the ground, their bare feet kicking at the air, their shoulders smashed against each other's, and thrust them all across the smooth floor until they bounce off the steps leading to the raised dais at the back of the nave. LaGorda slaps the floor with her open palms and gets to her feet like an angry bull ready to charge the conquistador. I run to her instead, making up the ground in a matter of seconds. LaGorda swings a wild punch, and I duck, only to spring up and jam my right fist into her chin. She falls backwards with a gasp, and her head thuds against the floor. She's out cold. Bonita jumps on my back and pulls at my hair. Someone punches me in the left cheek, and the other kicks me in the shin. Bonita slides down my back and hugs my upper arm so I can't move. Delfina swings, and I duck. The punch glances off Bonita's mouth, and she loosens her grip enough for me to twist away. I grab Bonita's right arm in my hands and I drive her towards Gabby.
You're dead, Marina! You are so dead!
Bonita shrieks, and I pull her sideways and knee her in the gut, knocking the wind out of her. I shove her to the ground next to La Gorda. Delfina's confidence is broken. She looks for the door.
You ready to leave me alone?
I ask her.
Doesn't matter. I'm going to get you tomorrow,
she says.
Right when you're not looking. You're gonna wish you didn't say that.
I fake right and lunge left, tackling her around the waist. Gabby tries to grab my hair, but I whip Delfina around to block her. Then I pivot on my heels and release Delfina down the middle aisle of the nave. Her back hits the first step at the altar, and her groan echoes off the vaulted ceiling. Gabby circles me.
I'm telling Sister Dora. You're going to be in so much trouble.
I turn my body to keep my eyes on her. She stops right next to the column. I can tell she's about to charge, and I'm ready for it. Suddenly, I see a flash of white above Gabby's head. It takes me a second to recognize that it's Ella, and she's jumped from the nook all the way down onto Gabby's shoulders. Gabby flails around until she can get her hands on Ella, and when she does, she tosses her onto the floor with a horrible cracking sound.
No!
I yell, and then I punch Gabby in the sternum as hard as I can. Her feet leave the ground, and she hits the wall, knocking dust from the stone wall's mortar. Ella's on her back, wailing, writhing in pain. But I notice she keeps her right leg completely still. I kneel beside her and pull up the bottom of her nightgown to see a sharp white bone sticking out of her skin, just below the knee. I don't know what to do. I put my hand on her shoulders to try to console her, but she's in so much pain, she doesn't feel it. I'm right here, Ella, I say. I'm here right beside you, and everything's going to be okay. Her eyes open, and she gives me a pleading look. It's then that I see the damage done to her right hand. Her tiny fist is mangled, crooked. Blood seeps out between her index and middle fingers. Her talent.
Oh my God, Ella, I'm sorry,
I cry.
I'm so, so sorry.
She just cries. I feel myself begin to sweat. Never in my life have I felt so useless. Try not to move, I say, knowing it's a futile plea. The nearest hospital is a half-hour drive. She'll pass out from the pain by then. She starts to rock in a rhythm from side to side. I hover my shaking hands over the shard of bone sticking out of her leg, not knowing if I should apply pressure or try to push it back under the skin. I decide on applying pressure, and the second my fingers touch her skin, Ella stutters with a sharp intake of breath. An icy tingle inches up my spine, a feeling much like the times I've brought life back to the flower in the computer room, and the feeling spreads throughout the rest of me. Is it possible that my ability to heal plants applies to people as well? Ella stops crying and starts breathing rapidly, her tiny chest rising and falling. I can feel the iciness concentrate in my palms and circulate outwards from my fingertips.
I think I can fix you.
Her chest continues to rise and fall at an abnormal speed, but her face takes on a look of peacefulness, of detachment. I'm afraid to, but I place my hands over the piece of bone that sticks out from her leg. I feel its pebbly, broken end, and soon it begins to retreat back under the skin. The puncture wound turns from red and white back to the color of her skin, and I can see the jagged contours of her broken bone move and shift within her leg, setting itself back in place. I'm amazed at what I've just done. This could be my most important legacy yet.
Keep still, I say. One more